Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Provincial State of Mind with myself, Owen Harrison, Jeff Neville and Tom Savage. This is a podcast normally focused on all four Irish provincial sides, but because it's the World Cup, we'll be talking about that. So we'll be discussing what happened the previous weekend, what we can expect in the upcoming games, as well as any major off-field news. So Jeff, just myself and yourself tonight, we're missing Tom. How was your week?
Week's been fine, yeah. I'll apologise in advance for my what sounds like dulcet tones. Just a bit sick at the moment and any kind of, I want to say inclination, although that's definitely the wrong word. What's it when your voice goes up, like when you're talking? You know, like when you're asking a question and the voice kind of goes up at the end. Is that inclination? No.
Intonation, is it?
Oh, I don't know. But any sort of that really hurts my throat. So I'm going to be like your man and father Ted tonight. Is, did you ask for the most boring voice in the world? So I have a feeling that'll be me. And I'll also apologise if I break off to sneeze halfway through a sentence. It's not on purpose. It's purely necessity. But yeah, good week. Good week, can't complain. Very, very busy. Don't people say it's good to be busy?
They do, but they lie.
Yeah, those people have obviously never not been busy and understand what it's like to actually just relax. But all good, all good. As you said, only two of us tonight. I heard Tom is busy writing a song. He wants to call it The Four Proud Provinces.
Of Leinster.
No, it's like, in fairness to him, no, like it does, it backs up all four. But he was kind of singing it to me earlier and he was like, provinces, provinces together. And I was like, I actually think this is a song, Tom. And I just think you've messed that up a little bit. So he was actually due to come on tonight, but when he heard that and he had to go back to the drawing board, he said, listen, I don't have time. I think he wants to get in on that children's choir act over in France at the moment. He reckons he can do a better shout. And he reckons that if he has a self-written song, I don't know where he got this information from, by the way. Like, there's no way they're going to allow him into the stadium to do this. But he reckons he could have it up and running in time for Scotland and he would be allowed to sing the anthem if that's the case. But
well, then I think what we'll have to do is we'll have to make him sing that as the intro for next week's program podcast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, it's actually, that's not a bad shout because, I mean, if this is probably the most favourite free podcast of rugby, I don't know how I phrase that, the most popular free podcast, I suppose, is how you'd, yeah, how you'd phrase that.
Non-subscription.
That's, yeah, the boy, yeah. I knew it was up there on somewhere and you'd manage to see what I was thinking on. You're very good at that. And I think if he wants to get traction at all, I think this is the way to go. You know, preview that Scotland game with a bit of, what did I call it again? The provinces or province, I can't remember what I called it at the start, but this joke is running away from me now. Take over, please.
Yeah, well, no, I don't have an awful lot of news either myself this week. It's been mainly a busy week with work and stuff like that, but the main news I have, and I feel we've neglected it quite a bit, is we need some little news within the podcast. We haven't had some for a long while.
Would you believe I have some little news?
You have little news as well. Mine was big news in our household this week that Lidl have stopped doing the pretzel.
Oh, I knew you were fond of that.
Myself and my daughter both fond of the pretzel and they've stopped doing it. And as my daughter said, Lidl are going to regret that. They're going to miss out big on that.
But like, I don't think your daughter is talking about sales numbers. I think it was a genuine threat from someone who's been fighting since she was born. I think when they said Lidl are going to regret that, I think genuinely the CEO of Lidl is thinking, shit, get that back on the shelves or she's going to physically fight me. So that's what I thought.
Firebomb one of the local stores.
It says a lot about your relationship with your daughter, though, that when you say that, I genuinely jump straight to she's going to fight Lidl, like physically fight Lidl. We had a Lidl open up actually out by us in the last couple of weeks. A local Lidl, I suppose. I absolutely hate the layout. And it's made me feel like the most middle-aged person I've ever come across. I walked into Lidl expecting it to be like the other Lidl that's, you know, not too far away from it in terms of its layout. It's all over the place. it's all over the place. You come in, you think, okay, bread's going to be on. No, bread's up the back somewhere. It's just, it makes no sense as a layout. You have porridge next to your apples. You have an orange juice machine right in the middle of everything. It just makes no sense. And I don't know about you. I like a layout. I like knowing this is my,
The comfort of knowing where everything is, the standardization of it all.
That's it. That's it. And the shop actually took me way longer because you're looking for scallions. Scallions in this new place could be anywhere. Could be absolutely anywhere.
Could be in the middle with the jellies.
Absolutely anywhere, yeah. It could be in the middle with the garden furniture, or it could be over with the yogurt. You just don't know. Yeah. And it might be a case of just having to get used to it, but I don't want to get used to it. I just want them to change it so I'm happy. Does that make sense?
Just be a normal Lidl.
Yeah.
Conform to Jeff's standard of Lidl.
No, but like, in every
That's what Lidl, you're asking it to do, Jeff.
But I'm asking it to be a normal Lidl. It's not. It's just, it's up the walls. It's just, it makes no sense. The layout just makes no sense. So it's going to take me a while to get used to it. But you know, then, do you know the way sometimes shops change their layout? Not, you know, every so often. I know once I get used to it, they'll change the layout again and I'm back to square one. I'm already on the back foot with this Lidl. I just don't think I'll catch up. I didn't mean for that to actually be such a rant, but it just makes no sense. It makes no sense. And then, do you know what came up the last day as I was watching the... What match was I watching? That Wales-Australia hammering. That bird popped up singing during the ads, yeah.
I saw that put into the WhatsApp group, actually, yeah.
I was just like, who's this? Who's this at halftime singing to me in my own home? Doesn't care less about the birds that came before him, but there he is singing at me as if I'm the problem. But yeah, it's just been a rough few days between Lidl and that bird coming into my home unannounced. I'm actually glad to have rugby to talk about this week, Owen, to be honest with you, for once.
Well, that's it. And look, we may as well get on to the big match of the weekend, which of course was Ireland beating South Africa 13-8.
It was a good game, wasn't it?
Unbelievable game. I don't think I have been as tense watching a match at home ever.
Yeah,
it was actually energy sapping just sitting on the couch.
Yeah, do you know sometimes there's moments of a game where you're kind of like, right, I'll nip out and make a cup of tea here, and I probably won't miss anything. Like a game kind of dulls down for a little while before it kind of crescendos. There was none of that. There was absolutely none of that. You couldn't turn away for a minute. Like it was a belter of a game, extraordinarily physical.
I think I don't know whether I put it out on Twitter or not, or whether I sent it to someone in a WhatsApp group, but I haven't seen as physical a match as that since I think the 2009 Lions tour.
Yeah, and that was physical for all the wrong reasons as well, I suppose.
Yeah, this was physical for all the right reasons, because like there was no cards, there was no even hint of sort of high shots or anything like that. I think there was one thing where the only thing that I can really remember was Ringrose going off for the HIA check because he got his head on the wrong side in a tackle. And that was it. But there was no element of sort of dirty or or high shots or anything like that, dirty play, anything like that in it. It was just pure intensity, high octane physicality and hits going in. I would imagine being a normal human being on that pitch would result in death.
Yeah. Like, do you know, we often joke, oh, my hamstring's gone. I would literally be like, I am not playing. My hamstring's fine. I am just not playing in that game. Like, oh, my days. Did you see, we're probably, I don't know, jumping around a little bit, like in terms of subject. I'm sure you have this all mapped out in the script and I'm just jumping ahead. But did you see the bit where Van der Fleer is holding on to Oxenstierna and he just kind of has a little look down, just a little stamp in the hand, and I'm not condoning it. I'm absolutely not condoning it. You can't do that. But it was kind of like in a J1 game where you're just like, I'll show you now what you're doing. It was, I don't mean to laugh at it. I don't mean to make light of it. because you can't. You absolutely can't do it. And Van der Vliet was wrong to tie him in as well, and I know that. But I did just think it was kind of very, very J1 rugby. Of need just to just have a little look down and just stamp on the hand and they said, there you are, young pup. You're going to learn very quickly not to do that.
That's it. I love it for exactly that same fact. It's two players shithousing each other. Yeah. Right? There's two of them at it. I would also say it is not, I don't like the word stamp being used on it, because to me, it's he didn't stamp on it. He actually stood on it. Because I think if he'd stamped on it, I'd feel very differently. He stood on it, and I think the phrase that the youngsters use nowadays is he fucked around and he found out.
I think more or less the same, to be honest. I wouldn't be surprised, like, well, the sighting window is definitely closed at this stage, like, but do you know, if it came up and he got a yellow card for it or something, you'd be like, yeah, well, that's fair, do you know? But I just thought, kind of watching it, it was a bit like watching junior rugby. It's like, there are cameras here. You can't do that. But clearly nothing's happened anyway, so it's no big deal. But no, I suppose jumping off from the start of the game, the first few minutes looking at it, like losing lineouts, free kick in the scrum, scrum pin, losing more lineouts. Like Ireland lost a third of their lineouts in this game, and I'm pretty sure five of them, if not six, because I have yet to go back and watch the game in full again, if you get me, and kind of count this stuff, because I've just been very, very busy. But I'd be nearly sure that five of the six lineouts they lost, if not all six, came in around the first quarter. So to lose those, like, and to be under that pump at lineout time, and especially how important it is, like how important the lineout is for Ireland, to be under the pump like that at lineout time, and then say after a quarter or 20 minutes, like, just say, okay, we'll fix this. And then actually fixing it. Because we talked about it last week, you know, yeah, you can go to the front, but that makes that, you know, playing wide risky. And you're also including the defender or the touchline as a defender, etc. Or you could go over the 15, but obviously that brings up that back line immediately. Like, there are a few ways around it, but, you know, just because you get possession doesn't mean it's quality possession in that state. But to go 12 from 18, it was very, very good considering the start.
To bring it back to where it was, but as you said, I think, like, a lot of kudos to us in terms of our discussion last week where we were spot on. Like, if you look at the early lineouts, the South Africans put two pods up and made it very, very difficult for Ireland to throw to the middle or the tail. They were also excellent in terms of the disguise that they put on it. Because if you look at the one that they stole early on, Ireland kicked to the corner. Sexton got them the 5 meter line out and they kicked to the corner. What they did was they put Kitsoff at the front, but they put him at the front as the receiver. But just before the ball came in, so they showed to Ireland that the front was available to them if they wanted. And Ireland went to the front and took it. But just before the ball was thrown, Mal Herb steps out at the back of the line out to become the receiver. Kitsoff goes into the front and becomes the lifter. And that allowed Peter Steph de Toy to go up at the front and actually steal the ball. And that's the reason. So they were able to disguise it very well in what they were doing. And the other thing that we pointed out last week was how Ireland can remedy that, and what they have been practicing in the first two pool matches was Ireland would go to the five-man lineup. And that's exactly what they did. And as you said, they took the five-man lineup and they made some variations around it, but effectively what they were doing was they were taking possession and giving up the strike move in the midfield that they wanted to run off it just to get the possession and reset it again.
No, it was quality. And to kind of, like, there's a lot of teams that would panic, and I'm not saying every team would panic, but there's certainly a lot of teams that would panic after that open 20 minutes when you're kind of saying, okay, our set piece is in real trouble here. But to just calm it, and I genuinely think that was probably the most elite thing of the game, was despite that opening quarter, Ireland just still went after it. They just still went after their process and said, like, we trust this, it'll come good. It kind of reminded me of, now this may be a bit of a reach, but it did kind of remind me of it, was the last All-Ireland final between Kilkenny and Limerick. if you saw both teams walking off the team, I think Kilkenny were maybe a point ahead or something like that at half time. But Kilkenny walked off blown, whereas Limerick just walked off as if to say, second half is coming. And I'm not saying there was the same difference in the halves as there was in the hurling and the rugby, because I mean, that second half against South Africa was still very tight, despite what the scoreline, well, it's only 5 points in the scoreline as well. Like, but I just mean kind of that halftime moment of like, well, you threw a lot at us. We're still very much in this game. We're not panicked. I like that kind of, like, it's almost like mentality monsters. Like, we are going to trust this process, and it's going to take an awful lot for you to make us shit the bed here. Like, and Ireland just did that. Like, they just went out, played their own game, didn't panic. Even when their line out was getting, I think they had lost four and they still kicked down the line to go for the line out. You're kind of watching, you're like, Jesus, would you, do you know, the us lesser folk are kind of maybe watching it going, what are you going for the line out for? Like, you're just going to lose it. But it's just that elite mentality of like, well, it will come good. We will back it. We'll figure out a way. And when we do figure that out, we're going to win this game. And it was that mentality side of it, I think, couldn't really be understated, because I mean, you go into a World Cup final, let's say Ireland get to a World Cup final and things aren't going right in the first 20, you say, well, hang on, trust the process. And like, you know, when you're under pressure, you resort to habit. The better the habit, the better the outcome. And Ireland can look back in that South Africa game and say, well, listen, we were under the cosh massively in that opening quarter. We trust the process, things come good. I think that was a massive, massive part of that game as well.
I think so. I think, as you say, you trust the process. You went down the line. There was some talk about South Africa closing the gap. They closed the gap because the ref allowed them to. And they closed the gap because Kelleher got pinged a couple of times, I think it was, for just crabbing back towards the Irish side. So South Africa were following him, and that actually gave South Africa, it almost gives them a license to, because if the ref and the touch judge are pulling that up, then they're going to allow them step as they see him step across as well. They're not going to pull them up and penalise them for it. I think that was really important. I think it wasn't all Kelleher's fault. I think there was some really good counter jumping from the South African side. There was one or two throws that were just poor from Kelleher.
I'd be very slow to blame all six on him.
Like, oh, completely. Yeah. And I think in terms of fixing it, you give the credit to the likes of Ryan and Peter Omani and Byrne. And like, you know, when it mattered, they went to Omani. They were able to use his natural skill set there. The spring that he has, the line out ability was all there. And to go with that, they brought it back to where they needed to. They got the possession. They got the ball down. When I look back at the match overall, though, I look at that match and you look at it in certain ways and you go, how did South Africa let that slip? Because as good as Ireland were, and we know a quality team, South Africa had the advantage in the lineout. They had the advantage in the scrum. They had the advantage in terms of the game line in both. I think a lot of it in defense and sort of collisions won. But they still couldn't get it over the line. Ireland were so good in what they did. But when you flip that over and you say, if you gave Ireland that level of dominance at scrum and line out and the ability there, Ireland would have walked that by, I'd say, 20, 30 points if they'd had that level of dominance and the game line. But Ireland's rucking, I thought, was just unbelievable. The way that when they held on to the ball, they weren't necessarily making huge gains, particularly when they held on to the ball in phase play. They had to get to the edge. If they couldn't get to that edge, they were actually starting to lose ground because the South African defense was that good.
Yeah.
But it's once they were able to get to the edge, and you could see a lot of it was there with these sort of long floated passes over the shooter or the wing or the or Creel coming up, just to get to that edge to allow the likes of Lowe and Hansen or maybe some of the forwards hanging out there to go beyond. And it was only at that point that they were winning it and winning the sort of the game line battle.
I thought Ben O'Keefe was excellent. I thought he was very, very good, to be fair. The game flowed really well. And like, don't get me wrong, like 100% people would probably say, oh, what about this call? What about that call? That's par for the course, isn't it? Like, you'll always have that. But like, I mean, there was some video there, and I didn't watch it, but like there's some video there on YouTube of, I think it's 20 odd minutes long, of Ireland cheating in the game or something like that. I mean, you know, that's kind of tinfoil hat stuff in my opinion, but I just thought he was very, very good. And I include, you know, the penalties against Ireland, etc. I just thought he was very good. I just thought I'd drop that in. But South Africa, through Dale Ende, at one stage made a lot of ground through a big carry. And you remember, South Africa would have been 3-0 up. They had a 5-meter scrum. Willemse and Lebok, they stacked behind the scrum. So that they split their centers, obviously wings both sides, 10, 15 behind the scrum. De Klerk breaks right, and he just gives a hard ball to Dale Ende. I think that Ireland got off the hook there, because I was watching it again back. That's one moment that I watched back a couple of times. I haven't watched the full game yet, but that was one I watched a couple of times. If he hit Lebok coming around Willemse, I think they're walking in a try for Colby on that touchline. Just because two of the three, so like you have Sexton, you have Aki, and you have Lowe on that wing. They're all turned in initially, and then Lowe turns out when he sees kind of that it's going to be Dale Ende crashing. But Sexton and Aki are both turned in. If that's just pulled to Lebok instead and Willems is coming around on his right, I think that creates a 2-on-1 with Lowe and no man's land. I don't think Aki would have been able to bounce across to defend it. And I think it would have made it an 8/10-0 game, which is a different picture altogether, I suppose, than 3. But again, South Africa didn't do that. So that's all we're bearing on. But I think they could have just... I think Dale Ende was the default option because he had made hay earlier on a carry. I think he got about to, what, maybe like 2 meters away or 2 yards away, whatever you want to say, from the try line off a really good hard carry. I think it was actually off a line out. But I think that was the default call, and they didn't actually play what was in front of them there. Could have been a very different game, I think. But again, you can only play with what's in front of you, and they hammered up through Dale Ende. They stopped that well. There was actually a turnover off that ball. And managed to clear, but I think South Africa maybe missed a beat on that one.
I thought South Africa, it was almost like they have a, I'd almost call it a split personality for what they're trying to do. They have the power in the forwards. They have the power in being direct, but they seemed to want to get to the edge to use the wingers more than they needed to. I think if they'd been more patient and used the build-up through the power of the forwards and the likes of Dale Ende and Creel and kept it narrow, they could have been far more effective against Ireland and build that pressure. But they were looking for the edge and to go wide almost before they'd won the right to do so. And that played into Ireland's hands a bit. I think because Ireland managed to turn over. Let me see if I can find the turnover stats.
Was it 12?
It was 12 times they managed to turn over.
12 is in my head, but that could be for any number of reasons. That could be...
Ireland, I think, turned them over 9 times. 9. South Africa only got 3. There was 12 overall in the
Yeah.
12 overall is what I had. But Ireland turned them over 9 times. I think part of that was the fact South Africa went wide too early, too often. I think part of it is the fact that the South African, call it the bomb squad or bench, whatever way you want to do it, it's built to replace big players with big players. So in there, they couldn't get their jackal threats to the breakdown out wide quick enough, even though they were putting fresh legs on. It still wasn't built into the game plan necessarily for them. If you keep that tighter, then you give them the chance of doing so, or even to protect it better. And I don't think they got the most out of it. And I think the biggest thing that you look beyond this is, are South Africa going to revert to type, or are they going to continue on with this being more of an on-ball team as they enter the knockouts? Because I think with Pollard back, I think we see South Africa revert to being that narrow team again. I think they start hitting in closer to the ruck and only going wide much later in the phases if they need to or if it's on. And I think you put Pollard at 10, you play a more conservative knockout Cup Rugby game plan for the three knockout games, and you crash the ball down through the middle. They'll play probably France first, then trying to think who they got. Is it Wales? No, Ireland of Wales or Argentina, I think, isn't it? So is there England? No,
it'd be England or Argentina, Fiji? Isn't
it? Or yeah.
Oh no, hang on.
On the other side, I'll have to have a look at it again. But yeah, like, yeah. You know, there. I think South Africa are now looking at it, or may have looked at it all along, as being we can experiment, we can try things and see what works and doesn't work within the pool games and the warm up games. But we're going for three knockout games, and yeah. For that we will need. The plan, I think, was always to get Pollard back in. The question for me now is, can they get a backup hooker in? Because without that, they don't have the same power up front. Like, you look at when South Africa made the changes.
They can only get a backup hooker in, though, if there's an injury at this stage.
If there is an injury, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, like, you look at what happened when South Africa made the changes early in the second half. You brought on Oxnish, you brought on Klein, you brought on Snyman, and they won two penalties in a row off those scrums straight away, and they scored the try off it. That was the change on it. And then once they took Bongi off, then they were in trouble because they still had the power, but they didn't have, in the second row, to transfer that through, but they didn't have the power at hooker. And I think that gave it more of an even keel within the scrum and allowed Ireland to get away with it. I think that destabilized the scrum, and the South Africans did that themselves. Ireland were able to handle that and did it really well in terms of surviving that. But by that stage, Ireland had got their line out sorted, so they had another platform to play off as well. And that allowed them to back into the game to what they needed to do.
What did you make of the last call of the game?
From Ben O'Keefe?
Yeah.
I think it was the right call. I thought he gave enough time. I think if it goes the other way, if he looks the opposite way first.
Yeah, so probably play on, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he goes to the center, if he goes to the Irish side first and then comes back round to the South African side, he probably sees the ball just about to be played and goes play on.
Yeah, and I fully agree, yeah. I had to laugh at some people saying, oh, he didn't even look where the ball was. Like, he was stationed on that side for 2-3 seconds. Couldn't see a ball. Someone to the other side to see, could he see the ball? Like, you know, what can he do? Like,
yeah, he gave it, 7 or 8 seconds to go look for it.
A good 5 or 6 anyway, yeah. And usually those things are maul down, no ball, whistle goes, Romeo done. No, I felt it was a good call too. I was just interested in your thoughts. At the same time, if he gave another second and it was play on, I wouldn't complain. You'd still be like, well, you know, would you like that? How would you like that kind of moment to decide a game? You'd probably rather it was play on at that stage. If, you know, he saw the ball, or like you said, if it went vice versa, you'd be screaming for it, saying maul, no ball available. And then you'd probably be screaming, blow it up, blow it up, blow it up, instead of playing it. But no, I don't think, like, I genuinely, even if I was a neutral, I don't think either side could complain kind of with the call that happened. Or if, like you said, he went the opposite side, if he went right to left and then saw the ball and said play on, you'd still be like, well, yeah, I suppose the ball was there. But it was a tense way to finish that game.
It was. And one of the things, again, we've talked about here, is the South African ball and how it's been depowered or destabilized in recent, I would say, even in the URC. The South Africans have a tendency to take the ball, to have a very almost north-south focus on it. They don't change the point of contact within the maul. Yeah. When the maul is down, it's drive straight at it and go. And I feel within the World Cup so far, the referees have been very lenient on people swimming up the sides, unless it's blatantly obvious. If guys can swing around, they're sort of getting in towards the back, they're allowed to stay there.
Yeah.
And I think because the South Africans haven't added the variation or haven't shown the variation so far on it, they're suffering that their maul isn't the power platform that they had at the last World Cup. and they haven't been able to sort of to utilize that. And I mean, if you take away the scrum depowers when you bring on your reserve hooker, if you take away that the maul isn't what it was, and then the third one that we have to talk about is obviously their kicking. Like, I mean, what were they beforehand? It was like someone said they were less than 40% overall from the tee.
Yeah, left 11 points anyway behind them. But like
in this game, but no, in the tournament they're only at 40% overall in the tournament, I think it was before this game. And like you can't have that. You just can't. I mean, you're asking guys like what, and I think what makes it even worse is you're not sticking with one kicker. So like when it's a long kick, you're going to Faf and he's not a regular kicker for that. Suddenly he's trying from odd angles, from length. It's more hit and hope than anything. Yeah. And if you leave 11 points behind you, you can get away with it in a pool game like this. You're not going to get away with it in a knockout game.
No. And like, it's cup rugby. Take your threes, off you go. Bundiaki was sensational. Absolutely.
He is having some tournament.
Sensational. Like that break he had, do you know when he went, one of the two breaks, I suppose, but I don't know, he had one clean break, didn't he? Do you know the big long one he had?
The big long one that brought us up,
It was actually like you release the handbrake of a car downhill and just watch it slowly speed up. The further it goes, like the quicker it was. But he's unplayable at the moment. I've never, like, you know, Connacht fans may say, like, back when Connacht won the Pro 12, you know, he had a great season that year, don't get me wrong, etc. But like, I genuinely don't think I've ever seen him in this form. He is outstanding. Easily the starting 12 in all the knockout games, I think. Which makes me think we won't see the likes of McCluskey for the tournament.
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, if you're looking at that, you potentially you're trying to get Henshaw into form.
Yeah.
If you are looking to do something. So I think chances of McCluskey playing slim enough.
Yeah, and Henshaw takes that, will probably take that 23, which means you probably won't see Jimmy O'Brien either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, barring injuries, there's a caveat there of injury, but like, it's must be rough enough. Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, I can imagine being in camp and knowing that your chances of getting game time, any game time now is, you know, gone or virtually gone, unless there's, you're maybe talking about two injuries for McCluskey to come in.
Henshaw in. I don't think he'd be the 23rd man if Henshaw went to 12.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so you're potentially looking at two injuries there for him to get game time. That's probably the worst part of it.
That's so rough, isn't it? Considering I'm a big fan of McCluskey, as you know, but like he's not put a foot wrong. He's done absolutely nothing wrong in regards, you know, during his playing time, let's say, since he kind of came back into the Irish fold. Now, I'm not saying Aki doesn't deserve to be there. Aki is nailed on 12. He's exceptional at the moment. He's playing out of his skin at the moment. But just to kind of go from, okay, I got a shot, I've done nothing wrong, getting continuous shots and doing nothing wrong in all of them, just to see Aki kind of come into this form again and just kind of overtake you. Then see Henshaw, who wasn't really in great form. Let's be honest, like he hasn't been in great form coming into this tournament for quite some time, and suddenly kind of seeing him overtake you then as well, it must be rough. Like you're so happy to get that shot, to get the selection. And like, don't get me wrong, there's all the talk of you're still part of a squad, etc. But like, we've all read enough books from former players like to say that when they've won medals in competitions but they haven't played in said competition, they didn't feel part of it, or they didn't feel like they've earned it in some way.
Yeah, they didn't feel worthy of the medal almost.
Yeah. So like, I mean, it must be so tough. Like I don't think professional sports, like all you want to do is play. And you can talk about being a great squad man. You can talk about, you know, getting teams ready, and you can talk all about that all you want, but ultimately all you want to do is play.
Unless your hamstring is at you.
Well, it depends on the opposition, obviously. I sometimes want to play. It very much depends on the opposition.
Yeah. Let me have a look at how they're warming up over there. Ooh. No, to be fair, there's none in the Irish squad are going to be thinking like that. But that's how me and you think.
That's how, yeah. But watching that South Africa game, like I was genuinely like, how do they wake up the next day and go down the stairs? Like, how do they get up and down off chairs? Like, it was the kind of physicality that makes me think. Like, I can't remember what player it was. But it was in their book anyway, and they said that after a game they'd have to sit down on the top of the stairs and go down step by step on their bum because they physically couldn't walk down the stairs. And like, it was that kind of game. You're kind of looking at it, you're like, and I know we touched on the physicality already, but it is worth reiterating, like, how do you just wake up in the morning and go about your day after put your body through that? Like, it just does not make sense.
No. And not only you sort of do it, but then you're sort of thinking to yourself, right, now I have to get back and I'm going to have to go training. Not the next day, but tomorrow you're going to have to go training again and hit tackle bags and go through live sessions. And you're like, why? Why do I do this to myself?
Are Ireland on holiday at the moment?
They are. They have a couple, I think they had 3 or 4 days off this week.
Like, that's ideal, isn't it?
You get over that big match, get time off, spend it with the family or whatever.
Oh, like, that's incredible. Like you compare that to, like, you compare that situation where you start with Romania, put a bomb of points on them, Tonga, beat them well. Then you have that game against South Africa and you go off for some family time for a few days, etc. You compare that to Scotland, who played one game and then suddenly knew what they have to do in order to qualify after just one game. And they went into their second game knowing if they didn't get 5 points in this game, that's it, we're going home. In their second game.
Yeah.
Like, that's rough. That's rough out. Like, and I know the schedule is what it is and blah, blah, blah. But that's... Imagine being in that the 70th minute, let's say, or the 75th minute of that Tonga game, right? And just imagine they only had 2 tries. You're sitting there thinking it's the second game of the World Cup and we're probably going home.
Some bear thinking about, like, you know, putting it, being under that sort of pressure so early in a tournament. Like, for Ireland, they have an ideal. They now come in, they'll play that final game. They know that if they win that, they're likely to have New Zealand in the quarterfinals. I think most people would agree at this point we'd probably rather play New Zealand than France.
Oh yeah, 100%. I'd rather play New Zealand now even than France without DuPont.
Yeah. No, it looks like DuPont will be back, which again is crazy. Yeah. How you can put plates into your face and then come back just a couple of weeks later.
Yeah, looking like Emmanuel Harinordiki. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That was his nose, wasn't it? Not his cheek.
Yeah. He had that whole mask on. It looked like someone had ripped out the, what you call it, a tube out of a bicycle tire.
Yeah.
Just sort of treaded it across his face. I'm interested to see has the sort of the design of the masks improved in all those years.
Yeah, I remember just seeing the tape, like it was just so much tape on his face, and I was like, how can he see? Like, surely the middle of his face, he can't. Like, I don't know why I did the action. People can't see it, but you know, surely you can see what's happening, like in the middle.
Be like front blinkers of you, like, on a horse.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you talk about the tape that he had on, the only way I can describe that is he had Nick Williams level of tape on his body.
Oh God. Yeah, no, it's cool. Like, it's great that DuPont will be back though, because like, without getting too romantic or emotional about it, I think it's his tournament. Like, it's tailor-made to be him as the poster player for this tournament at home in France. I'm just really, I suppose, I am getting emotional about it or romantic about it, but I'm just glad it wasn't taken away from him. Like, I think there's still something special to come from him in this tournament. And I'm just looking forward to seeing that.
I think you want the biggest players playing in the biggest tournament.
Yeah, there's
And
that too, yeah.
To me, there's part of that. I think, he was always going to be that sort of poster boy for it in the home country. He's also probably the best player in the world. So you want him there. He attracts the money and he attracts the sponsors and the whole lot. But it does, like, I would say probably one of the most disappointing things for me within the World Cup has been how world rugby have treated, I won't say, not necessarily the fans that are at the game, but it's how do they get it out to the wider fan base?
Oh, it's in like their highlights and social media channels and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, it's incredible, isn't it?
Have been so poor. Like, they've taken down anyone who's put up clips. Anything that's been put up clip-wise has just been taken down within a day or two. There's nothing there. They're not letting anything grow organically through that or try generating interest in the game. I've seen and spoken to so many people who have been at games in France and then couldn't watch the game back or even the highlights of the game back for a couple of days afterwards. They just couldn't find it anywhere legally.
It's actually insane. And even like GIFs and images and stuff, like, I've not posted a single thing online, on Twitter in regards the Rugby World Cup, because it's just not worth it. It's just not worth the hassle. It's not worth the whole situation. And again, it comes back to the idea of, why are you denying others providing you free advertising for the sport? Like, you have the global competition on at the moment. It's the biggest competition you have in this sport, and you don't allow people to see it. It just makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense. And if there was ever a time to get new people in to the sport, it's during a World Cup. Like, you always hear of fans, like, during the Six Nations, oh, it was on telly, so I started watching it and I fell in love with rugby during the Six Nations. Like, you hear that the whole time, like, during the World Cup. Oh yeah, I heard the World Cup is on, but sure, I can't watch that. Like, not like I can't watch that because, like, I don't like it. It's I can't watch that because I physically can't watch it. There's no highlights. I went to watch a highlight there, and it was what's it, geolocked?
Yeah,
and I'm like, it's the World Cup. Like, why are you doing this? Like, it makes no sense.
But it's not even that. It's not even the highlights of the match itself. What you want to get is you want to get those one or two moments.
Yeah.
Like the special skills, things like that, that will maybe draw someone in and go, what the hell is this? How did he do that? It may get them to go, okay, what is this rugby thing? How did he do that? Why does he do it? And you get someone in to look at the big moments. That's not going to happen off this, the way that World Rugby have gone about it. It seems just such an archaic viewpoint of how to run it, on it, that you're not looking to expand the game overall. You're happy we have our little corner and that's it.
Yeah,
it just doesn't make any sense.
I think that's exactly it. Like, we have our fans. It's like, we have enough friends. We don't need any more.
Yeah. Like, my contacts folder in my phone is full now. I don't need anyone else. You're good, thanks. One of the other things I wanted to talk about was the impact of the Ireland bench.
Yeah,
on Saturday was excellent.
Beelan was good, wasn't he?
I thought Beelan was excellent. Sheehan obviously made a big difference when he came on. Henderson was back to his best, I thought.
Yeah.
I thought, particularly once you had Ryan and Omani come off, I thought his leadership, how he dealt with the line out, and again, his ruck work, etc., were excellent. Conor Murray made a big, big impact when he came on. And again, something we talked about last week, we felt that there was definitely a discussion about whether you start Murray. I think Gibson Park, without wanting to come across, I think it's not a game that suits him, because once the ruck starts to slow down, once people put Ireland under pressure, if he has to make decisions, he's a service nine. he gets to the breakdown fast and he slings it out. He looks for his 10. He looks for his first receiver. When he has to start making decisions around it, when he can't get clean ball, it becomes more labored for him. And I don't think it suits his game style. And I think that's why we talked about Murray. Murray had a huge game when he came on, both from a physicality point of view. He got that turnover. I thought his passing was good. His kicking, obviously. Not that he should be starting every game, but I think there were certain games that really suit what Murray did. I thought Crowley was excellent when he came on. You could see him there step back into the pocket nicely, took the dropped goal attempt. Okay, it didn't work out, but got the penalty off the back of it eventually and took his kick. He had some good moments where he stood into the pocket. It's not saying that he's going to replace Sexton or anything, but for what you want from a young 10 coming in to close it out, I think he did really well.
I liked when he kicked his penalty. I know it wasn't that, like, I suppose I would have missed it, but I know it wasn't a difficult penalty to kick if you're a 10, but I liked how he took every second of it. Like, did he kick it when there was maybe 3 seconds left on the clock or something? And
yeah,
he stood there for long enough. Now, I'm a big believer in the unconscious versus the conscious. Like when you go to, I suppose, when you go to perform an act, I suppose to compare it to another sport again for the second time tonight, I often think of footballers when they're about to kick a 45 or when they're about to kick a free kick. The longer they stay thinking about it, sometimes that's almost a negative. Whereas you see them take a pass in live play and they just turn, whip it, goes over the bar because it's that unconscious thought. I think it can be the same with kickers in rugby. Sometimes you're thinking, okay, I just want to kill this clock a little bit. But to be able to stay in that moment for that extra 15 odd seconds and think, don't panic, don't let thoughts creep in. I don't know if I'm making sense on this one, but...
When you're doing something that's instinctive or as part of your normal routine, it's fine. You can follow that. You're sure of it yourself. As you say, it's that when you have to go outside that norm, you know.
And he still...
Do you let the bad thoughts in?
He still went through his routine and everything, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But he prolonged it for another 10 odd seconds where suddenly you're standing there and you're thinking, okay, just breathe. Like, you can't afford to let that thought of what if I miss this creep in.
If I'm standing there and I'm going for the extra 15, well, if I'm standing there anyway, crapping my pants in the first place. But secondly, you're going, like, your brain is just going to be going, don't miss, don't miss, don't miss, don't miss.
Yeah. And I know it's different for professional sports, sports people, etc. But like, or high level sports people, I suppose. But I just liked how we took every second of that, made it a 5-point game. We're talking, you can say like, oh, well, it only took maybe 10 to 12, maybe 13 seconds away from South Africa, maybe. But I mean, as we saw with the last play of the game, another second and it's play on. So like it is fine margins at that level. And to deny South Africa 10 to 15 seconds by doing that legally, but denying them time rather than trying to play 2-3 phases more of having to play, let's say 2-3 phases more somewhere else where it's much higher risk of, I don't know, turnover, penalty, knock on, whatever. I just liked how Crowley did that. Just took his time, banged it over and just said, okay, next job. I just liked how he took the entire time that he could take for what was a relatively easy penalty.
In terms, I mean, we touched on it a little bit previously. You look at the other teams that are there, particularly France and South Africa, they've had their injuries. They've had some of them to key players like some Malcolm Marks, Dupont, things like that, Entomac as well. You know, Ireland have been so lucky so far.
Isn't it incredible?
The only one is Jack Conan. He's the only one, really. And he's coming back. Yeah, they brought him in injured. I mean, like, to go through the first three games with him, I think, look, he may make the it probably make the 23 for the next game. But for Ireland, they have got this far without, they've had a couple of knocks. Cian Healy is the only injury that they've had the whole way through, really.
Yeah, and you think as well, like, they took Sheehan while injured, Kilcoyne, Conan.
Kelleher was carrying a knock for a couple of weeks, wasn't he?
Into it. But he played in the first game, didn't he?
He did, but it started just coming. He was picked in the 33.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
With the knock.
But like, just to trust the process that they'll all come well as well and not kind of panic and say, well, he's injured, can't bring him. Like that, yeah. You said Conan's the only one not to play yet. But the fact that Ireland, okay, Romania, yeah. You'd be nervous. Well, again, even against Romania, all it takes is one tackle. And we saw that between Namibia and France. But all it can take is one tackle. But you go into that Tonga game, maybe a little bit nervous. You go into that South Africa game. You're thinking collateral damage wise, what would be classed as acceptable before you kind of got into the Pyrrhic victory side of things? If there was an injury in that South Africa game, given the physicality that you saw there, you'd kind of say, okay, that's par for the course.
Yeah.
Like, and I know this sounds very maybe cold-hearted, like, but you look at that game and you look at the physicality in it. The fact that nobody got injured is incredible. The fact that nobody, like the fact that Ireland are going into that game against Scotland with probably the same 33 that they had or that they selected, it's some going, to be fair. Like, and then it just means it's four games with that full fit 33.
Well, I suppose that's it. Is who would be the top players that can't get injured now?
Andrew Porter, Johnny Sexton, Caelan Doris, Bundiaki, I'd nearly say, just because of the way he's playing. I'd say Mac Hansen.
I agree with your Porter, because I don't think we have anyone who can come near his level at loose head. I think we can get away at hooker.
I think the Sheehan Kelleher, they're not too far away. Oh, they're kind of similar players, yeah.
Yeah. I think tight head with Beelum coming up and Furlong not at the level he was previously has sort of made that less of a gap to in terms of losing it. Back row, I agree, Doris. Maybe less so now with Conan coming on, but there is no one that can replace him and his specific role, I think, at number eight within the team. Sexton, to a degree. In the centres, I think I disagree. I think Ringrose is more important than Aki, because I think you can replace Aki to a certain degree, but I'm not sure you can get a like for like.
No, you're 100% right. Yeah, you're 100% right. Yeah. I don't know how I didn't think of Ringrose, to be honest. 100%. Yeah.
Shame on you, Jeff. Shame
on you.
I know.
That's just me. That's me. You know, I hate Leinster. I don't see colour except I hate blue. No, you're 100% right on Ringrose. He is phenomenal. And he is very important. Yeah. Don't know how I didn't think of him.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think there's cover there for the rest of it, but I think there's four or five players that if there was to be an injury, that could be, I won't say catastrophic, but it would be a fairly significant impact on the starting team.
Yeah, I think the only, I suppose, saving grace there though is, I mean, it's probably the same with the other countries. Do you know, like, you look at the likes of South Africa. I like Jesse Creel, don't get me wrong.
Mm.
But Lokanyoam is Lokanyoam. You know, you look at maybe their second rows. I think Etzebet does a job for South Africa that not many others could do. So I suppose that's the only other caveat, isn't it? Every other team is also one injury away from plugging a bit of depth.
That's it, but the pessimistic side of me goes, they've already had their bad luck, so to speak, with injuries so far.
Yeah.
It's funny. Ireland haven't quite got there yet.
It's funny how much a bit of luck impacts big competitions like this. Like you can, like when you think about it, like Ireland, South Africa, France, New Zealand, to a degree, the, I suppose the differences between them are so minute that a bit of luck genuinely becomes enormous. Like you think back to, remember that Munster Exeter game, that Billy Holland lineout steal?
Yeah.
Something as small as that. Like it is just a lineout steal at the end of the day on paper. It's just a lineout steal. But it swung a game.
That was the game, yeah.
Yeah. Or like something like an injury to an opposition player before the game kicks off. And I know that sounds awful calling that a bit of luck, but ultimately, like, I mean, if Ireland were playing France tomorrow, you obviously want to see Dupont playing, but if he can't play, your team has a better chance. It's just percentage, you know? So like, I mean, that small bit of luck, I think probably gets ignored, for want of a better word. You know, you can look at that Ireland South Africa game. Like, if you go back and rewatch that game and look for a bit of luck, I guarantee there is a bit of luck there somewhere. It could be a knock on, or it could be a pass into touch that if it didn't go into touch, you know, little things like this. I think a little bit of luck gets ignored an awful lot.
Yeah, I think so. Even like, not even necessarily luck, but as you say, an injury or something like that. Even you go back to the last World Cup final, Sinclair goes down.
Yeah,
early
yeah,
on in that,
yeah,
changes the game completely.
Yeah, or you know, Beale slipping for Australia, kicking against the Lions.
Yeah,
how many times has he not slipped? And that's that one time. Yeah, it's a funny one. I wonder what the next game will bring. dare we dream? Dare we?
Dare we dream? Well, look, I think we'll round it up there, folks. Thank you very much for listening to our ramblings and for supporting the podcast. Please do rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen, as it really helps. And also be sure to share the podcast on social media. Hope you have a good week, and we will, all things going well, we'll have three people back here next week where we'll discuss the Scotland game and preview that. Have a good week.
Depends if he gets that song written in time. You know that.
Oh, they'll have that to look forward to, actually. Yeah.
You know that brilliant joke I made at the start. That, yeah, was a provinces, terrible joke.
Provinces. Yeah.
Provinces. Right. Goodbye.